This is an Arizona Sports Phoenix Sun special on 98.7 FM and the Arizona Sports app.
It is our Phoenix Suns off-season special here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Welcome in, everyone. Jordan Bird alongside our resident Suns insider, expert, guru, every word that you want to put on it, Kellen Olson from ArizonaSports.com. Kellen, what's going on?
I'm flattered, man. Thank you.
Well, I only speak truths, and that's one of the reasons why for the next 2 hours, we're going to be breaking down and discussing everything that's upcoming for the Phoenix Suns, because this isn't exactly the offseason like last year where the Phoenix Suns had the number one overall pick. They had the choice between DeAndre Ayton and Luka Doncic. We all know, well established, what camp you were on and what camp you're still in terms of that pick. Not exactly as attractive as an offseason, but still nonetheless an offseason that could go a long way in determining the future of the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, last year was the first ever number one pick, and there were various options for them on the trade market and the free agency market. Then they wound up spending all their money on Trevor Ariza on the first day, and it was over just like that. So it's kind of anticlimactic in a way. But to me, this offseason is about not necessarily staying the course, but doing that while also giving little
upgrades. I hope it's not staying the course.
Yeah. But in terms of what they have right now, which is a lot of good young talent, and they honestly lucked out with the way their head coaching situation unfolded and getting Monty Williams. The amount of young talent that they have, there's a lot of ways you can screw this up. There are a lot of ways you can screw this up, don't get me wrong, but it seems like the most obvious thing here is giving Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton some help. But what exactly is that help? How do they get that help? How good does that help have to be? Are we talking about the Mike Conley, Jrue Holiday names of the world? Are we talking about lower tier, like free agent point guards, for example, like the names Gambo's brought up, Darren Collison, Corey Joseph, and so on? That's kind of where we have to figure out where the Suns land over this next two-month period.
Before we look ahead, and we're going to spend a lot of time looking ahead to the NBA draft, which is now just 2 weeks away from today. NBA free agency is not far around the corner. There's a lot of moving pieces to this summer for the Phoenix Suns. But before we look ahead, let's go back a little bit, because so far it has been a pretty eventful summer already for the Phoenix Suns, most notably the hiring of Monty Williams. And this idea, I think, that is starting to, it was just a small seedling, and now it's starting to grow a little bit, is that the Phoenix Suns and their culture, albeit it's been about a month and a half with Monty Williams on the job, maybe not even that, but the Suns' culture is beginning to turn in the right direction.
So I just want to start with a question on looking back to last season towards you, because of course, 19 wins. That is nothing to really get excited about.
Well, I mean, it depends. If you're an NFL team, that means you had a great season.
But with that being said, do you view that year as a slight asterisk given how much roster turnover that they had? Because I think that is something to keep in mind when projecting to next season, because I believe if you take a group with Tyler Johnson and Kelly Oubre and minus the likes of Ryan Anderson and Trevor Ariza and Isaiah Cannon and get these young guys ahead another year, which is what they've done, Aiden Bridges entering their second year next year, I think it's reasonable to expect these guys to get to at least 26, 27 wins, even without any additions. I really think that this group is a lot better than their win total represents.
I agree, but let's not say an increase of 6-7 wins is anything to start throwing the ticker tape parade for. So, I mean, yeah, this team has the potential of winning mid-20s to high-20s with the same core that they had last season. And it's almost going to be like you mentioned this season or past season having an asterisk. It's not only the roster turnover, it's the Igor Kokoschkov era. That is now going to be probably lost to the annals of history as we look back and think about, oh, yeah, who was the coach in that 1 year? Oh, yeah, that, well, man, I forgot all about that. So I think along those lines, and especially with the early returns and everything that we've heard from Monty Williams, I think that's a factor, too, that even if this roster comes back very similar to what it did last year, which we'll get into this, is a very distinct possibility, this team is still probably, with all of the improvements, they could get close to 30 wins just as is.
I understand I'm giving them too much credit, too, because some of those losses that they had on the year, the problem for this team the past 3 years, 4 years, has been just being competitive, because we're seeing these losses where they're down by 26 points in the early second quarter. That sounds like I'm exaggerating. No, that's actually what was happening in a lot of these games, and there were some nights where it was clear within 12 to 15 minutes of the game, the Suns were not going to win that night, and I think that's really the next step forward for them. It sounds really basic and elementary. Well, we're at a really basic and elementary stage here with where the Suns are at right now.
And that's what I think is so curious about the hiring of Monty Williams. How much does his presence alone change this attitude, change this culture? Because as you mentioned, there's been a lot of times over the last few years that the Suns were just not competitive. They were not playing at an NBA level. And even this past year, or what was it, the 14-15 game losing streak? And it seemed like if that losing streak had went one more, Igor Kokoschkov was going to be fired in season. I can't imagine that group was really excited and rallying behind their coach during that losing streak. Now, it did seem like they kind of caught on in the second half or in the later stages of the season, but I don't know if we see that. I hope we don't see that under Monty Williams, where this team falls into a doldrum and it just starts compounding itself time after time after time.
The reason they really lucked out with hiring Monty, I think, to the point that you're getting to there and making, is that they have managed to at least make a change that is going to change things for the culture, or at least we hope it will. We're at the start of that, right? We're not saying that Monty Williams is coming in here and everything's great and the Suns are no longer this dumpster fire. They still are that dumpster fire until they prove otherwise, and this offseason is a long step for them to take. But step one was making a successful hire after they fired a coach after one season, and they did that in getting Monty Williams. And I think him just representing that is important to me and kind of puts maybe a pause is the right word on us worrying about Devin Booker getting unsettled and him wanting to leave, because that's the overarching shadow over this entire discussion that we're having, is that how much do you have to rush this process in order to alleviate concerns that Devin Booker is going to get unhappy with all this losing? Because the bottom line is, he's one of the best scorers in the NBA. He's one of the best guards in the NBA. And at a certain point, 20 to 25 wins is not going to cut it for a player of that caliber. And eventually, when he keeps getting better, because remember, only 22 years old, 30 wins, 35 wins is not going to cut it for him. And he's going to want to go elsewhere while he's in the prime of his career. And that's got to be a concern for the Suns. And it's going to be, because if we see the likes of a Mike Conley or Drew Holiday trade for real assets the Suns are giving up in one of those deals, or even just trading the number six pick for a point guard, that means they want to go. That means they feel like Devin Booker needs to get going and they need to keep their star happy, and he is a star.
Well, let me give you a hypothetical, though. If they don't get better this year, can Devin Booker think, you know, they change coaches, they change GMs, and they're still not better?
Well, no, and that's where I was about to go. I felt like if Igor Kokoschkov was still here, if he was brought back for another season, a second season, and things were not better, as Jarrett Carlin was pointing out there, I think that's where you start pressing the alarm button.
Okay.
Because, you know, not only is the team not producing on the court, but there just seems to be a lack of energy, effort. I hate to keep using the phrase, but culture around this team. I think with Monty Williams, especially since this will be his first year, if the wins aren't here in the 2019-2020 season, I think it's almost a mulligan, because it's the new year of Monty. Things are starting to get going. And I think having Monty Williams, with the way that he is so well respected around the NBA, not only with players, but front office executives and media members, I think that could go a long way in smoothing out some of the issues, like a disgruntled player, something that may have festered and have gone from a hangnail to a full-on amputee situation. I think Monty Williams has the type of temperament that can not make those molehills into mountains.
So to that point, and maybe not them not progressing as much as we would like to see next season, I think the most natural thing looking at this offseason, and again, it sounds like we're talking about baby steps, but we need to talk about baby steps with the Phoenix Suns right now. And that baby step is just having a functioning roster and rotation going into the season, because remember, this team went an entire season without a point guard. Yes, they had guards playing point guard, but they didn't really have that point guard that they needed. I remember when Ryan Anderson got traded to the Suns, I was like, okay, some shooting off the bench, that'll work, and then it was quickly reported that they view him as actually a serious piece of their rotation, and they're going to start him at the four, and that set off some alarms at the time, but I was willing to write it off and see how it played out. Oh, we saw how it played out. It did not play out well, and then once it was clear that Trevor Ariza was also muddled into that group, as was Tyson Chandler, all of a sudden you're off three players here and you're missing the point guard, and it hurts a whole lot more. So if they can go into this season, add that veteran point guard that Gambo has been referencing a couple of times, add a four-man, add a backup five, or bring back Rashawn Holmes, bring back Kelly Oubre, okay, you've got a 7-8-9-man rotation you can legitimately trust now, and as long as they have that, even if the quality of the player is down a little bit, I think that's acceptable.
Now, how many of those particulars do the Suns actually have to hit? Because we've talked about for a year and a half about the lack of a true NBA point guard on this team. Now, even after Monty got hired, there was a talk about, you know, I like combo guards. You know, it's not saying that that's the end all be all, but the Suns, both Monty and James, seem to leave open the option of, well, we don't necessarily need a true facilitator. We don't need a true ball handler. We just need another combo guard. Does that scratch the itch of being a fully functional NBA team?
Well, it depends on how you're defining combo guard, right? Because I think Malcolm Brogdon in Milwaukee is an example of a guy who's not a traditional point guard. He's a combo guard, but do you trust him to make basketball decisions on a consistent basis and impact the game in a positive way? I think you absolutely do. I think someone like Patrick Beverley is a different mold, where it's more of shooting with him as opposed to playmaking, but you really trust him defensively and you really trust him as a shooter. Darren Collison is a little bit more off the dribble for him, and I think that you trust him there to a certain extent. It's getting someone of that caliber and going to Tyler Johnson, for example, he qualified in that range, but the amount of playmaking that they need from that position for what Devin doesn't have around him right now is notable. But one of the guys he got was Kelly Oubre, who helped him score more and provided that secondary option. DeAndre Ayton's getting a year older. Mikal Bridges is getting a year older. So those needs kind of change, in my opinion, and I don't think you need that true floor general, but it wouldn't hurt, Jordan. It surely would not hurt.
Well, no, I mean, in terms of would I rather have a true facilitator or a combo guard based off of what we've seen, I would prefer a true facilitator. But I know with the state of the Suns, beggars can't be choosers right now, and we need just someone to come in here. I told myself I wasn't going to do this.
You're doing the thing.
Yep.
I'll walk
that back right now.
Yeah.
But I just feel like there's been so much lack of NBA talent. I don't care if it's not 100% fit. If it's a 75% fit, that's better than the alternative with what the Suns have been doing the last few seasons. Speaking of free agents and potential players that could be coming into the mix for Phoenix this summer, coming up next, we'll take a look at those free agent options, including a trade that went down in the league today that didn't have a whole lot to do with the star power involved, but it could impact the Suns as free agency kicks off in just a few short weeks. That's all coming up next with Kellen Olson, Jordan Bird. It is the Phoenix Suns off-season special.
Arizona Sports Suns Special on 98.7 FM and the Arizona Sports app for your smartphone.
It's Jordan Bird and Kellen Olson here from 98.7 FM, our Phoenix Suns off-season special, as we are just 2 weeks away from the NBA draft. The Phoenix Suns will have the 6th overall pick. And Suns fans, don't forget that you can be part of the action. You can be at the Phoenix Suns draft watch party that is going to be taking place right at Talking Stick Resort Arena June 20th. If you want to be a part of it, all you got to do is go to suns.com for RSVP, and you can be a part of the Phoenix Suns draft party. We're going to get to the draft in a few moments, but let's start with free agency, because there was a big move today, not necessarily in terms of star power.
Or names, yeah, but
but it really plays a factor into how this summer is going to set up and how it potentially could affect the Phoenix Suns. Adrian Wojnarowski, among others, were reporting that the Brooklyn Nets are trading Allen Crabbe and the 17th pick in the 2019 draft and a protected first pick in the 2020 draft to Atlanta for Taurean Prince and the 2021 second round pick. What this does is Brooklyn clears about an additional $18 million in cap space, which really allows them to be a player this summer and by proxy maybe make some of their current roster fixtures a little expendable for other teams like the Suns to maybe pick up.
Yeah, first of all, this speaks to how amazing Twitter is, because a trade that involves Alan Crabb and Torian Prince can dominate conversation for 2 hours just because of salary cap implications. The NBA is wild. So second of all, the most obvious thing here is that it opens up two max slots for them. Now, the interesting part of those two max slots is, in order to get the second one, I believe how it works is they have to get rid of D'Angelo Russell's cap hold. Russell is a restricted free agent. He also happens to play point guard and is good buds with Devin Booker, by the way. So if they want to go after their dream, quote unquote, their dream scenario, which Woj has referred to as signing Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, they would probably get rid of D'Angelo Russell. They would have to, or they could trade salary another way and sign D'Lo and just have negative cap space forever too. But D'Angelo Russell is involved there, and so is Spencer Dinwiddie, who we should not sleep on at all in this conversation. He's a legitimately good point guard.
Well, and in all honesty, I think he is the more realistic option here, because under that scenario, if Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant end up in Brooklyn and makes D'Angelo Russell expendable, do the Suns have enough cap space as they currently sit right now to afford a D'Angelo Russell and also bring back a Kelly Oubre, which for the last couple of months seems like it's almost been a foregone conclusion that he's coming back to the Suns?
Yeah, they do not have the space. They would have to create it. That's where Tyler Johnson's $19 million expiring, which is what we assume it's going to be. By the way, he has a player option. He has not accepted it yet. A lot of players
going to accept that,
but he is going to accept that. I mean, he could decline it and they could sign him to an extension, but that just really doesn't make sense given what they want to do and the moves that it seems like they want to make.
Well, do you see any scenario where Tyler Johnson is point guard for the Suns next year?
I actually do, because A, this stuff is insanely difficult to pull off. This scenario we're talking about ends with the Brooklyn Nets signing Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. That seems pretty implausible in and of itself. But getting D'Angelo, okay, so let's say that happens, by the way, and D'Angelo Russell is now an unrestricted free agent. Now you're competing with all these other teams to sign D'Angelo Russell, and oh, by the way, you have to create this room because it's very likely that you've already signed Kelly Oubre. That seems like the foregone conclusion. Now you're dealing Tyler Johnson, or you're dealing TJ Warren to open up this spot if you can get him. There's a lot of moves that have to be made, and you have to get someone like D'Angelo Russell to buy in, and that's why we go back to Spencer Dinwiddie, in my opinion. It's more realistic. It's easier to trade for him, in my opinion.
Now, just quickly on the Russell, I don't want to be a tinfoil hat Suns fan here, but I am a lifelong Suns fan. With all of the circumstances that you laid out just a few moments ago, the fact that he is a very talented point guard, the fact that he is boys with Devin Booker, D'Angelo Russell I'm talking about here, and the fact that there seems to be a breath of fresh air here in Phoenix around the Suns, I'm one of the biggest things I'm curious about this free agency period is how does that translate into interest for these players that are out there? If D'Angelo Russell is available and he is a true free agent and has his pick, I'm not saying it's coming to the Suns, but this now is a far better looking situation than it was just a year or two ago.
Oh, for sure. Just adding any other capable ball handler, really. We were talking about some names in the last segment, Corey Joseph, Darren Collison. Both D'Angelo Russell and Spencer Dinwiddie are far better ball handlers and just overall offensive threats than those two guys. Dinwiddie is a little bit more balanced to me and just complements Booker a little better because he can sort of play off the ball more and is used to that complementary role because he's playing it in Brooklyn right now with D'Angelo Russell, with Caris LeVert, two other guys who need the ball quite a bit. D'Lo is more of your superstar. He is the guy that you're going to have to pay max money. And look, he deserves max money with the way he played in the second half of last season and the way he showed up from time to time in the playoffs. He wasn't the best in the playoffs, but he certainly had his moments where he was proving that he deserves that money. And it's going to be, how do the Suns approach this potentially with the draft before free agency is a fascinating thing here, because if they have serious aspirations in free agency but the right deal comes up during the NBA draft, I wonder if that makes them hesitate a little bit. It shouldn't, in my eyes, because if you have the right deal there, take it. Don't worry about any what if, because the what ifs aren't very kind to the Suns.
Now, before we move on to some of the other positions for the Phoenix Suns, let's stay on point guard, because there are a lot of other options out there in terms of finding a point guard that currently aren't on the Brooklyn Nets right now. You have veteran like Ricky Rubio, you have Kemba Walker, you have potential trades even with Mike Conley and Drew Holiday. As we sit right now, and I said the Suns go into training camp, they go into the regular season with a legitimate veteran point guard, what do you think is the more likely route that that actually comes about this offseason?
Trade seems the easiest to me. It just seems like the Suns not only have the assets to get it done, but there's just such a big opening there that it feels like several guys can fill in that spot. We're not really being too picky here at this point. We're talking about specifics and everything, of course, because that's the way these conversations go. But overall, they just need a point guard there and a decent one, hopefully. And there are a lot of decent point guards in the NBA that could fill that spot. And the thing with free agency that we keep forgetting about every couple of weeks we have these conversations is there are a ton of teams that have money. There are a ton of teams that have max slots that aren't going to be able to fill those slots with max slot players. So those teams are going to want to spend money and still bring players in because they've been telling their ownership group, we've got $45 million in cap space. I know we had a down year this year. We didn't make it as far as we wanted to in the playoffs, but we've got money to improve. And then all of a sudden, Tobias Harris is gone. Kevin Durant is gone. Kyrie Irving is gone. And they're looking at someone like
Villanueva and Ben Gordon.
Yeah, exactly. You're looking at the next Timofey Mozgov, Luol Deng situation for those teams and for the Suns who are looking to maybe get those guys on a cheaper deal or a more realistic deal. Now they're one of the teams who has to overpay too. All of a sudden it's going to create a really competitive marketplace. And who knows how these dominoes fall with all the other superstars, Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis are involved. There's a lot to forecast. That's just really impossible to project right now.
And I'm glad you brought that up, especially Tobias Harris, because that's been another huge talking point this offseason has been the Suns need a four. They need a power forward. And Tobias Harris's name has been floated out a lot. There was the Julius Randle report that not only does he have interest in Phoenix, but Phoenix is willing to kick the tires on him as well. What you're painting, though, is a picture that's kind of bleak, where after maybe the Suns find their point guard and after you re-sign Kelly Oubre, there's not a whole lot, once again, unless you create cap space with Tyler Johnson, but there's probably not going to be enough in the budget. There isn't going to be enough in the budget to go out and get one of these power forwards who are probably going to get higher paid than they deserve.
The big question that you can't answer right now, that I can't answer right now, and only people listening who are in NBA front offices, which is not many people right now, can answer, is how much value does Josh Jackson have on the trade market and how much value does TJ Warren have on the trade market? Because that could play a factor in them trading for those guys. And I think it could also play a factor in how they look at those guys potentially just to save money. If Josh Jackson's value is so low that they would just rather trade him to open up $7 million, $9 million in cap space, whatever it is, TJ Warren has 3 years left on his deal. He's making $10, $11 million a year in each of those 3 years. Those are other avenues to open up cap space. But again, if those guys have value, you're looking at dealing them another way. And I think that's really the impossible thing for us to be able to tell. There's a lot of unknowns going in, but we do know that the Suns have needs to fill right now. And if they just sit on their hands right now, they're going to have not a disastrous offseason. That's a little bit harsh there, but they're going to have an unsuccessful one because they have things they need to get done. It's not easy. And they have a first-year general manager trying to execute it as well.
But also on the flip side of things, don't they also have to practice a little bit of patience here? Because to see how the market plays out, to see how some of the bigger dominoes may fall and where they go and the trickle-down effect on how that can impact them, it's going to be a bit of a fine line because, yes, you're going to have to be proactive. Yes, you want to be aggressive and identify the players and go after the players that you want. But also just by the structure of the NBA offseason and your own salary cap situation, you might have to sit on the sideline for a little bit to see how things play out before the dust settles.
I'm glad you brought up your own salary cap situation in the Suns because having Devin Booker is great. It's great having a young talent like that. You also have to pay him $27 million next year, $29 the year after that, and $31 the year after that, which just makes things a little tighter around these situations. And again, this is not going to be an easy offseason in terms of maneuvering and everything. There are too many things in the way, such as that Tyler Johnson expiring, which of course came via the Ryan Anderson trade, which of course came via the Brayden Knight trade, which of course came via the Brayden Knight contract extension. Shouts to Ryan McDonough for that one, for leaving James Jones in a tough spot there. But it's just not going to be easy. But I think it's important there about patience to hit on that again. Devin Booker is 22. DeAndre Ayton is 20. Mikal Bridges is 22. Kelly Oubre is 23. We assume he's coming back. Those four guys, if you keep those guys, that's a playoff team in a couple of years. So you do not want to screw that up. And there are ways to do that, unfortunately, this offseason.
Coming up on our Phoenix Suns offseason special, he's been on the job just a few weeks, but he's already made a huge impact on the fan base and the organization. We're going to talk to new Phoenix Suns head coach Monty Williams. That's coming up next. You're on Arizona Sports 98.7 FM.
This is an Arizona Sports Phoenix Suns special on 98.7 FM and the Arizona Sports app.
Welcome back into our Phoenix Suns off-season special show. Jordan Bird alongside Kellen Olson, and joining us right now here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, we have the honor of talking to the new head coach of the Phoenix Suns. He is Monty Williams. Monty, how are you doing today?
I am well, guys. Thanks for having me on your show. Looking forward to being in Phoenix.
How are you acclimating to the Valley of the Sun so far? I know it's only been a short amount of time.
You know what? It's been different than I thought. It's starting to get warm a bit. I just got back here in Jersey, but while I was in Phoenix, the weather was off the chart. It was in the 70s, and even when it got up into the 90s, it wasn't like 90s on the East Coast, so I enjoyed that. But I know the burn is coming, and I'm prepared for it.
Coach, one of the things you had mentioned in your intro press conference was that you were watching film on the guys and the Suns and starting to get a little more used to how they operate. Now, that, and you said you were going to watch more, so with that in mind, I want to ask, since you've been watching more film and just the work you've done overall, what stood out the most about this group watching them back this past year?
Well, there was a ton of roster turnover and different guys in the fold, and it's hard to get continuity when you have different lineups, and you know, you have certain guys who, you know, we had Jamal Crawford last year, who's known for his scoring, and so when you add Jamal, you see a different team out there. So I've tried to target moments when I saw our young core on the floor, and when I watch film, I see the moments, stretches where they're playing hard and together, and the ball's moving, and then you just see a bit of youth against really good teams. You could have a lead, and then all of a sudden that lead is gone, and you can just pinpoint a lack of savvy or just veteran teams being better, having more experience. And so I see the youth, but I also see a team that, if we can put a core together and keep them together for a while, which I know we will, we're going to be pretty good here soon.
Now, one of the things that goes along with that is kind of changing attitudes and perceptions, because it has been a down period for the Phoenix Suns. There's no secret about that. And one of the things that you said not long after you were hired, you were on with Adrian Wojnarowski on his podcast, and you talked about how you don't like how sports teams are, they use the term family, and how, if anything else, you got to build a culture. But with so many young players, do you have to approach this maybe differently if it was a little bit more veteran squad, in terms of, I'm not saying a family where you got to, you know, baby them or, you know, suck up to them or anything like that, but is there a fine line where you maybe have to tweak your approach a little bit?
No doubt. You know, most coaches would love to walk into a Milwaukee situation where you have veteran players who were stinging from playoff losses and one of the best players on the planet on your team. We have young guys on our team that have that potential. And that part is, we say the word exciting all the time, but it is. And for me, I think we as a coaching staff will begin with a ton of situational teaching. I've been compiling a number of situations that involve other teams, especially in the finals, where we can teach our guys how to handle situations that happen end of game, end of quarter, playing out of the post, playing against movement. And I think it's good to show the two best teams in the league while they're playing right now, because it's fresh and you don't have to attack your own team, because sometimes guys take teaching the wrong way. Sometimes they tend to look at it as criticism, and our guys don't know me well enough yet. And so one of the things I'd like to do is use examples from the finals to help our young team grow and try to speed up that learning curve.
coach, it's a very interesting time for you to come into this job because this group already has a ton of young talent, but that young talent has gone through a lot of losing in the last 2 years, and with that comes maybe developing some losing habits. So how do you try and really shift the paradigm there and figure out how to build those winning habits instead while also building up your philosophies and getting everything in that you want to instill into these guys?
Yeah, we've had conversations. I've talked to a number of players. Fortunately, guys like Phoenix, so they're in town a lot. And I've been able to work guys out and spend some time with them on the floor. And to a man, all of the guys want structure. They want discipline. They want all of the things that winning teams have. Because we have good guys. When you talk to DeAndre, we were just texting yesterday and just talking about what we want to do as a team and how much work it's going to take. All of our guys are on board with that. And so for me, it starts this summer. You know, I don't want to wait until the end of September and October to start developing our culture, our atmosphere. We're going to do that this summer. Our coaching staff will be solidified here soon, and all of our guys will be in town to start building a culture in Phoenix. And so when guys come back, we want them to feel and see some changes, and we want to hold on to the things that are pretty good. We have really good people in the organization, and that's really impacted me a ton, is the amount of good people that really want to push this organization forward, and they're working their tails off and have been for a while. And so I'm coming in at a really cool time, but I can't say enough. Our guys want to be better. They're working hard right now. And to be that young, it's exciting to have young guys in the gym in June getting ready for a season that's relatively a ways away.
We're talking with Phoenix Suns head coach Monty Williams here on Arizona Sports 98.7 FM. A lot of news was generated out of the fact that during the last few weeks or so that you've been actually out on the floor working out some of these draft prospects. And I know you laugh, but I mean, there was a story about Terry Stott in Portland. Like when they were working out prospects, he was watching through the glass on a treadmill. It's not very often that you have an NBA head coach that is working out what are a lot of second round or maybe even undrafted players. What was the reasoning behind that, kind of getting your hands right into the mix?
I mean, I never really put a lot of thought into it, guys, to be honest with you. We had guys, we had like 36 guys come through, more than that, because we had guys who were like alternates, and those guys were great, in case someone got hurt. So we had close to 40 guys, if not more, come through our gym. And for me, these guys deserve more than just a workout. You know, and the way I see it, and I could be wrong, I don't want players to come through our gym and just get a workout, get a sweat, get some Suns gear, and move on to the next city. I wanted to be able to not only touch them, teach, see how they react in certain situations. We drew up plays. I put them through drills that I want to use. I put them through drills that I was out to see if they good to use during the season. And I just love coaching. I love the gym. Maybe I'm weird that way, but I love being in the gym with players who want to get better. And that's how I was brought up, from Taft Hickman in high school to Pat Riley to Greg Popovich, Doc Rivers. Even as a coach, I learned a ton from Nate McMillan. He was a hands-on coach, and he was a relational coach and is. And I feel I have an obligation to not only help guys when they come through to improve their draft stock, but also to teach them so that they're better when they go to another team if they don't get drafted by us.
Monty, through your years in the league, you've coached a lot of special players, from Anthony Davis to Joel Embiid and so on. It's a long list. It's a very impressive resume. And two players in Phoenix that really have a chance of reaching that level with their young potential they've shown is Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, those two players. What have you seen from them both afar watching that film again, but also just your initial impressions of talking to them and how they have the potential to maybe reach that all-star, all-NBA kind of level in their playing career?
I mean, when you look at Devin, I've said it a number of times, he has a game that translates to every portion of the season, whether it be the beginning of the season when teams come out and they're excited, and he's a guy that's going to stand out in the beginning before All-Star break when teams start to, you know, get bored with the game heading into the playoffs, but especially in the playoffs. I think Devin has a game that a lot like the players you're seeing right now and some that are on the bench that can't play, but I don't want to say names. You guys know these guys. They can get their own shot. They can make other guys better. They can create for other guys. He's got a big, strong body. That really impressed me when I had dinner with Devin a couple weeks ago, was how big he is to be that young. And DeAndre, he looks like a beautiful canvas that you just don't want to mess up. He's just a big kid. He's athletic. He's long, his hands. I had a chance to work with D on the floor one morning, and I was blown away at his footwork, and I was excited about what I didn't know, because as we started to teach him a few things, he picked it up quickly, and that excited me. So both of those guys can elevate an organization and can carry an organization. It just takes time to teach them, but also to allow them to build an on-court relationship, and hopefully that translates into a lot of wins and success for the team.
Coach, I know the next couple of months is going to be a lot of potential roster turnover with the draft and free agency and everything else that might entail. Sure. And with you being still so new to the organization, how much input do you have when it comes to the draft and when it comes to potential targets and free agency?
Well, James and myself, and along with Jeff Bauer and Trevor, we talk a lot. That was the other cool part about being in the gym last week. We just talked a lot about the team and what we need and what's good. But James is a plotter. I mean, he's on the phones. He's looking at different teams. He's evaluating what we have, and you know, we talk a lot about our guys, what we need to improve. I share my thoughts with James, but I have to trust James to make decisions that are going to be best for our team, in the same way that he has to trust me with the on-court stuff. So we both talk about both things, how we want to play, environments we want to play in, the ways we want to play with Devin and DeAndre, and I'm really excited about Tyler. I think Tyler is a guy who's been in a winning program, and he brings intangibles to the team that really excite me. And so to answer your question, that was pretty long diatribe. I trust James to make decisions that are going to make our team better.
Coach, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Welcome to town once again, and we're looking forward with the work that you have ahead of you with the Phoenix Suns.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks, Coach.
Monty Williams, head coach of the Phoenix Suns, joined us here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Coming up on the Phoenix Suns offseason special, we've talked free agency, so now the other big elephant in the room, the NBA draft, and what the Suns do with the number 6 overall pick. That's coming up next here on 98.7 FM.
This is an Arizona Sports Phoenix Suns special on 98.7 FM and the Arizona Sports app.
It's Jordan Bird alongside Kellen Olsen as our Phoenix Suns offseason special rolls on. We spoke a few moments ago about what's upcoming for the Phoenix Suns in terms of free agency and what are some realistic, viable options for them in trying to add to this roster, but the most logical place to improve your roster is the NBA draft, and unfortunately it didn't work out for the Phoenix Suns in the NBA draft lottery. They will be picking number 6. Could have been worse, could have been 7, so the glass isn't completely empty, but now that the dust has settled on the draft lottery and the attention has turned to the number 6 pick, correct me if I'm wrong, Kellen, but I feel like there are three main guys that are being mocked or being considered from the national analyst for the Phoenix Suns: Coby White out of North Carolina, Darius Garland out of Vanderbilt, and Jarrett Culver out of Texas Tech. Is that your assessment?
That's my assessment, but it's also a group of way more guys, in my opinion. We still have a little bit of time before the draft, 2 weeks, in fact, and I think there's a lot of movement that can still happen. I think that once RJ Barrett is off the board at three, which is what we expect, anything goes at this point. And we see that happen in every single NBA draft, where once you reach a certain threshold of players, now you start seeing teams just really reach for guys that they like. And sometimes that's at 10, sometimes that's at 16. In this draft, in my opinion, it's at four. If someone really loves Gonzaga big Brandon Clark, who by most experts is ranked in the 8-12 range, team could take him at four. It wouldn't surprise me. Nasir Little is another name like that. And it's just, it's unpredictable in my opinion. But I think what is predictable about the Suns in this situation, in my opinion, is that they want the guy that is ranked around that range. They want the guy that they can rely on the most in that situation. It seems like to be the vibe we're getting from them in terms of them assessing what they want out of this draft pick. And Jarrett Culver makes the most sense to me for sure.
Speaking of Culver, it's been reported that the Phoenix Suns will actually be in Lubbock, Texas tomorrow as they take a look and have a workout with Jarrett Culver. A few weeks back, you wrote a piece for ArizonaSports.com that I thought laid it out very well about these NBA draft prospects, and you put them into tiers. And you had Zion Williamson in Tier 1 all by his lonesome. Then you had had Ja Morant and
R.J. Barrett.
Barrett, thank you. And kind of that second tier. Some of the names that the Suns are looking at right now, are they in that third tier for you? Or are they potential, like you said, maybe even a little further down, a little bit more of a project potentially?
In my opinion, Jarrett Culver is in that range with R.J. Barrett and Ja Morant, but for the experts who are paid to do this for a living, really analyze the draft 365 days a year, they actually have Culver more in like that 5-7 range, really. And the thing about Culver is you question what his star upside is and if he's worth a 3rd, 4th, 5th pick in this draft, because he's good at a lot of things. But how many of those things that are going to A, translate, and B, get even better in the league is going to determine if he's just a solid, smart, crafty, kind of decent wing player, or is he an all-star, or is he the next Paul George? We don't really know with him, and that's the great unknown of not only him, but this draft. It's a very underwhelming draft. There's not a lot of buzz about this number 6 pick right now, because if you look at last year's list, for example, you had names like Michael Porter Jr., Trey Young in this range, Wendell Carter Jr. There was a lot of appeal in this range of the draft last year, but you can see how much a draft class can change that. Last year's was a tremendous draft class. This year's not so much, and we're really seeing the effects of the Suns falling 3 spots in the lottery all the way down to number 6.
Talent.
I saw a ranking that had Jarrett Culver number 1. That was on best first names, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no way. This is Zion Williamson's draft through and through.
You know how many people's blood just boiled when you said that and waited the 2 seconds they were about to jump through their radio and strangle you?
Thank you. That's my brand.
That's what he makes his money off of right there. Now, when it comes to, and I know this is a kind of a loaded phrase, but let's put talent aside for one moment.
Yeah.
Strictly look at position. And I know a lot of Suns fans might say, well, Jarrett Culver, that's just a potential another wing player that would be coming into a team that is lousy with wing players right now. That's why I want Garland. That's why I want Coby White to facilitate that point guard need. How much do you think the Suns will utilize need with the number 6 overall pick?
I think it's going to factor into the decision for sure. But the problem here is that Darius Garland and Coby White, their two biggest weaknesses as scoring guards is actually playing point guard and doing the things that point guards do in game. Just controlling the rhythm of it, getting certain guys involved defensively, shooting, things like that. There's little role player aspects of their game that just don't really add up right now. The thing that those two guys are the best at right now is scoring on their own with no one else involved. And that's not what this team needs next to Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. There's enough offense there for the entire team, really, when you project them in a couple of years. You want more complementary guys. So if Coby White was more of a floor general who was a defensive specialist or a better shooter and just a smart, heady player, I would say that he would no doubt be the choice here, but he's not that player. Neither is Darius Garland. With that being said, I think Garland helps your team more than White right now just because of what he's capable of offensively. I love his burst and his ability to shoot off the dribble, and there's some star qualities there for sure, but at the very least, you're getting a guy who threatens the offense more, in my opinion, and that would help Devin Booker, I think, but how much would it really help him to the point where you need to take him? I don't think that's really a thing.
To your point, Kellen, there could be one team out there that kind of goes off script and changes the whole top half of the first round of the NBA draft.
The Oakland Raiders, the New York Giants.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, we saw that in the NFL draft this season, but I guess my point is that it feels kind of like maybe the top 7 or 8 prospects have kind of settled when you add in Hunter from Virginia and Cam Reddish. It feels like those are kind of the cream of the crop. Is there a prospect out there that isn't getting a whole lot of buzz right now that could maybe be a, you know, a wild card pick for the Phoenix Suns at number 6?
Kevin Porter Jr. to me out of USC kind of represents what you want next to Devin Booker, just an all-around threat with the ball in his hands. He's definitely a scorer first, don't get me wrong, and he's in the same mold of Darius Garland, Coby White, but much more of a two-guard. But with that being said, the huge appeal of Devin Booker is that you don't necessarily need a point guard, quote-unquote, next to him. You can afford having a guard there if the guard does the right things. And Porter shot over 40% from three at USC. He's a very good athlete and really knows how to attack the rim and score for himself as well. The problem is he went through a lot of bad stuff at USC. He got suspended for 2 games, went through injuries, did not play consistently, didn't earn the coach's trust, and that is why he's not a top 10 pick right now, when I thought he might even be a top 5 pick a couple months ago. But he's a guy to me, if I'm looking around and looking at the Cam Reddishes and the Nasir Littles, I think that Kevin Porter Jr. is also in that realm where if someone took him at 6 or the Cavs took him at 5, it would be a shock for sure, but he's a name that has appeal for a reason.
How much money is Kelly Oubre going to get this offseason? What are the Suns going to do with all of their wings on their roster? And probably the biggest question of all, how will the Suns address the point guard need? We'll try to answer those questions next on our Phoenix Suns offseason special here on Arizona Sports 98.7 FM.